And I don't mean a young Cubs fan, but a fan who's been following this team for a while. And you remember 1984. There's just something special about 84. The Cubs, for the first time, winning something when they won the National League East Division Championship. And there are a lot of fond memories when you turn that music on. It became the theme song of the Cubs. The WGN used it as the theme for the TV broadcasts. And joining me on the telephone is the center fielder, the Gold Glove winning center fielder from that 84 NL East Championship team, Bob Dernier. He's playing in the Legends game on Saturday at the Corn Crib. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mark, and good to be aboard, as it does. It always brings back a fond memory. It was the Take the Field theme song for us that year, and Jump and Van Halen were rocking. It was really a pretty fun time at Wrigley. Some people call it the beginnings of Cub Nation. I guess you could equate it maybe to the 67 Boston Red Sox. They chronicled the kind of busted the odds that year, and then, of course, we know what's happened in the subsequent 50 years in Red Sox Nation. But Cub fans remind me, Mark, all the time, and that's something that I'll always be very grateful for. And being a part of that team was just a blast.
Yeah, it was fun to watch you guys. There was something different for the first time about the Cubs. Dallas Green brought a whole bunch of you guys over from Philadelphia. You had played for the Phillies. They had gone to the World Series in 83. Gary Matthews, Dick Ruthven. You had a bunch of pitchers from Philly, Larry Boa, of course. And it just changed the whole culture of the team because you brought so many people there that thought and knew, hey, we can do this thing.
Yeah, Keith Moreland's another one. Of course, some guy named Sandberg showed up in a trade.
Sure. An important piece.
With Larry, with Boa in 82. And then I went with Sarge in the spring of 84. So we had played together a lot. Rhino and I had played 3 years in the minor leagues together, so, and hit 1-2 in the order. So we were sort of familiar with what we wanted to get done and setting the table for, those next five guys or six guys. Boa wasn't a power guy, but those five guys after Rhino included, we had six guys that could leave the yard whenever they wanted to, it seemed. And, Larry and I were kind of the singles, doubles guys. And, you look at the club today, Mark, it's not the same, but in some ways, we got a lot of thump in this lineup in 2017, 2016. Those cats. One thing I got to say is that I think we're still trying to figure out who's playing center field every day and who's leading off, but it's certainly a fun time in Cubland right now. I love coming to the ballpark. I was there Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, you talk about leading off, and that's what you did for the Cubs, and then Rhino batted behind you, and Harry Carey came up with the nickname of the Daily Double for the two of you because you'd get on base, and maybe you'd steal second, and then he'd knock you in. You scored 94 runs that year.
Yeah, well, and Rhino was, I was pretty lucky, Mark. I mean, in Philadelphia, I had Rose, Matthews, and Schmidt. And then in Chicago, I had Sandberg, Matthews, and Moreland or Durham. I mean, I had some pretty awesome players around me, Rhino included. One thing we thought was really important for our team that year was being kind of the ignition guys, make sure we get the offense going and get it going early. So Harry, we had a tendency to do that. So Harry, being the horse track guy he was, he dubbed us the Daily Double.
And that stuck.
It did, and it still does today. Rhino and I still kind of giggle about it. I see him regularly as well. And, some of those, whenever we talk about it, some of those memories are, they're still ever-present today. And, you mentioned Legends game. I will say we affectionately call those games the Night of the Living Dead. in baseball terms, we're dead playing-wise, but we're still alive, and whenever we can do those things, I know I've done them now for years in a variety of ways, including up there in Bloomington Normal, and I have friends up there. I love coming up there.
Well, you call yourself a singles hitter, but when you guys opened the National League Championship Series against the Padres, I just want to play a highlight for you because this is how Game 1 of the League Championship Series began with Bob Dernier at the plate.
As Kennedy turned around and said something, as Denier sends it deep left field. Going back and looking up is Martinez. It's gone. Cubs lead 1-0.
That's the great Hall of Famer and announcer Don Drysdale calling the game, calling your home run, Bob, to lead off the series against the Padres in 1984. You were just trying to get on base and you hit a home run. Tell me about that moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're a little extra. Obviously, you're stoked. So much adrenaline going into game one, and Wrigley hadn't had a playoff game in forever, and so we were equally jacked up. And I was first pitch I took, but I think once my knees kind of settled down and I got that first fastball, it was up a little bit. So the good thing, Mark, was the wind was blowing out about 14 miles an hour, so I knew right when I hit it was gone, and I didn't hit that many of them. So, we ended up having quite a day. Gary Matthews hit two home runs. Ron Say hit one. And the big redhead Sutcliffe hit one on the street on Sheffield, and that record stood as an NLCS single-game home run record for one team until, of all teams, the current Cubs, broke that record with six in the NLCS. And so we held that record for quite a while.
I was looking at your baseball reference page, and you forget these things, and I know it was a lot back then, but the most money you ever earned as a major leaguer was $708,000, which today wouldn't be that much above the minimum. And in today's game, a player who won the Gold Glove as a center fielder and stole 45 bases and scored 94 runs as a leadoff man would be making about $10 million a year. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, but, the thing about that is, the only thing I envy about the guys today, I will tell you, is how well they're taken care of. The nutrition, the consciousness of resting players, keeping them fresh, the year-round training, how that goes. Our generation wasn't like that, so that part I envy. But the money, it's all relative. I don't think whatever we do, they ever pay you enough, and they probably never pay you too much. But I never played baseball for money. I always looked at it like, take care of the horse and the card will be there, and quite honestly, I thought they paid us pretty doggone good, and I wouldn't trade the guys the era I got to play in for any amount of money. So I'm glad, because we went on strike for them, several times in the 80s to help enhance that opportunity for players, and they're reaping the benefits today. It's great to see.
All right, you not only did you play for the Cubs, you were a member of the coaching staff, and you were a roving minor league instructor, ran into you on several occasions in Peoria, working with the Peoria Chiefs when they were a Cubs affiliate. You coach defense, base running. What are you doing these days?
Yeah, and right up to through 2011, I was coaching in the big leagues with the Cubs in 2010 and 2011. And then, I think a necessary change came about. And you know how baseball is. When guys come and go, they usually they bring their guys they're familiar with, and certainly Theo did that. So I knew my coaching days were probably over, or, at least that opportunity, that portion of it had ended. So, but I'll tell you, first-class people that they are, Crane Kenny, Theo, Jed, even Dale Swain, the manager at the time, they all called me and kind of opened the door, if you will, on the way out, but with the idea that, hey, you're going to be around in some kind of way. You're always welcome here. It was just first class. So as it's evolved, I've become, kind of stepped into a bit of an ambassador mode with the Cubs, and I do a lot of things with them at the ballpark and continue to do the Cubs convention and the fantasy camp for years and years. So I've even done some media, as you might be aware of. So I like this portion of the journey. And the journey with the Cubs has been nothing short of a 33-year love affair, probably the best of my lifetime. Baseball is not always faithful, but this relationship is really unique, I think, in sports.
You've played with a lot of great players. Who's your favorite teammate of all time? And if it's not fair to ask you that, just give maybe one of your favorites and a reason why.
Well, I, had so many. I could call favorites. I can tell you, Sarge and I, Gary Matthews and I, talk every week. Rhino, I talk with regularly, see him. Lee Smith, I just saw day before yesterday. On a regular basis, I see, you know, those guys. Steve Trout's another one I'll run into. You know, still fond of and talk with many of those guys. And, you know, they I think we all kind of created a bit of a bond that year. We fell short of winning, but I think that summer, most fans will tell you, it was one that they'll always enjoy thinking about or reflecting on, and we're just kind of lucky enough to be, or I am. I'll talk for myself. I feel like I'm one of those guys that's lucky enough to have been a part of that team, for sure.
All right, let's talk about the Legends game on Saturday. Players who haven't played for a while, some of them stay in shape, some of them get into the life that the rest of us have. Whenever I've run into you, and I haven't seen you for a few years, you were always in better shape than most ex-players. You always kept yourself in good shape. You were slim. I assume you still are. Could move around. You were bouncing around on the bases, showing those kids at the ballpark how to run the bases. Can you still play? What are we going to see from Bob Dernier on Saturday night?
Well, if we need to raise money for, you know, for charity or something, I would consider we could line up. Of course, we have to check IDs. You have to be at least 60 years old now, and I'll bet you I can still outrun you.
You probably
so
could.
I'll stay in my lane in that way, but I think overall I feel pretty blessed. I've always had kind of a slim frame. I'm never going to be a big fat guy, I guess. I walk the golf course and play 100 rounds a year. That helps. So, you know, it's just, I think it's all about staying active, really, Mark, and trying to eat well. My wife makes me eat all the greens and the, you know, fresh vegetables and all that. So I'm not a big drinker guy. I don't think there's any major, new thing I can tell you that to help you if you want to try to stay in shape. But I'd suggest staying active and try to eat right.
You played in the game last year, and you reminded me before we went on the air that Rick Ankiel robbed you of a couple of hits.
No, I robbed him.
Oh, you robbed him.
That's right.
Okay.
And yeah, I was actually shut out. Timlin was throwing about 90 miles an hour for St. Louis. And that's when I heard we were playing softball this year, I said, hallelujah.
Yeah, they've corralled a couple of us into playing in this game, and I think I'd rather just watch you guys play than participate myself. I don't think I can add anything
to
it.
No, get your fanny out there, as my good friend Randy Hundley might say, and get in the water with us. Come on.
All right. All right, now, are you leading off? Have you seen the batting order?
They have a tendency to do that to me, so I would guess probably yes.
Your teammate Mitch Williams, or I think he might have been right after you were with the Cubs, but Mitch Williams is going to be in this game too. These guys don't get to pitch overhand. He's quite a character, isn't he? He's in broadcasting too. I think he still hosts a radio show in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I've run into Mitch over the years a few times. I played against him, you know, when he came over to the Cubs, and I was back with Philadelphia. Of course, the Wild thing, and then he was in Philly in '93 with that Wild bunch, and where he fit in rather handsomely. And I still run into those guys occasionally up in Philly, maybe doing a alumni weekend or whatever. And the stories that come out of that '93 Phillies team are pretty impressive, Mark.
They were a good club, and they just missed winning the whole thing too.
That's right. Yeah, that was a team that Dykstra, Dalton, Hollins. I think they had Schilling. It was a good club, no doubt. And Toronto, if you remember, really just outslugged them. It was quite a World Series.
Yeah, there was one game, I don't remember what the final score was, but it was something like 13-11, something in that neighborhood.
Yeah,
that was
in Philly.
That was a game, and I think that was a game that Schilling pitched.
Yes, probably, and I'd have to review that. Of course, you know what happened with Schilling after that, not long after that. Of course, he was Boston bound. and then the story, the whole bloody sock thing, and so his history's, you know, it's pretty impressive, the teams he played on.
Well, Bob, we're going to look forward to seeing you and players like Rick Ankiel, Mitch Williams, Mark Pryor, Brian Jordan, Carlos Zambrano, couple of Bears there, Dan Hampton and Steve McMichael, all in the Legends game on Saturday night. There's still tickets available. Go to normalbaseball.com to find out about how you can get yours. Hey, thanks for being on the show today, Bob. Good to talk to you again.
You bet. Thanks for having me, and I'll shout out to a couple of my favorite friends, Judge Paul Lawrence, and also Judge Yoder up there. They're regular fantasy camp attendees down in Mesa, Arizona every winter.
Okay, we'll see you Saturday, and take it easy on us amateurs, okay?
Okay, hey, why don't you get second? I'll let you be Sandberg for the night.
Oh,
okay?
Man, you'll have to steal second and third if you have any hope of scoring when I'm batting.
All right, that sounds good.
All right, thanks, Bob.